Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. I'm your host, Stone Payton, and joining me is my producer and co-host, Lee. Hello, Lee. How are you?
I am doing awesome. How was your Super Bowl weekend, Stone?
Oh, we had a good time. I could care less about who won the game yesterday. I'm not a big fan of either team, but I enjoyed watching it, and I really enjoyed the commercials.
Yeah, did you have a favorite?
Yeah, I did, but I wanted to ask you first. What was your favorite commercial?
I like the Doritos one, the amateur-produced one with the crystal ball.
That was well done. And, you know, our buddy Brent Brooks, who guest-hosted the show one time, they submitted a couple of entries for that, and I think they got close to the finals. But I thought that was really innovative, speaking of innovative, of the Doritos organization or Frito-Lay or whoever runs that thing, to do that viral marketing pre-show kind of advertising.
Right, because not only did it save them a ton of money hiring agencies to produce that, they engaged their community.
Yeah, well, yeah, they got their consumers involved in the design, so I thought that was really cool. But in answer to your question, my favorite was the real confident kid, the David Abernathy. He comes right out of when he was born. He shakes the doctor's hand for congratulating him on a great delivery. And then he goes straight up to the pretty girl that's 2 years older than him, and then he gets the job that he wants. That was my favorite.
So you feel that what was it? It was cars.com that
well, see, that's,
buying a car was – I thought the payoff wasn't any good on that.
Well, that's part of the challenge that I really don't get a – I don't have a great handle on because I thought it was a great commercial. I could not have told you who the commercial was for.
Yes, and that's the how I define a great commercial. That's where we differ, I guess.
Well, and I've always thought of myself as a creative person. I thought, you know, maybe – Stone, maybe you've got a knack for this business of helping people put together commercials. But I got to tell you, over the years, had I been an executive in charge of evaluating some of these commercials, let me tell you something. I would have shut down the duck, the Energizer bunny, the talking lizard. So I'm obviously not the guy to make those decisions. But we had a good time watching the Super Bowl, and it was an exciting game, and I did enjoy the commercials. Second place for me was where the guys keep hurting each other, you know, and they say, I'm good.
Right.
Don't ask me what that one was for. I think it was some beer.
I don't know that.
No, it wasn't beer. It was Bud Light. But yeah.
I can see you're a little beer snob there.
Yeah, a little bit. But I enjoyed watching it, and it kind of got me in the mood to do today's show. Today's show is going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a little different than usual. For those of you that listen in regularly each week, you know that we typically will talk to a senior executive inside an organization and ask them about how they are engaging their people and getting them to be truly innovative and producing genuine ROI on their innovation efforts inside their organization. And sometimes those executives are here local to the metro Atlanta area, and sometimes they're all over the country. And then we typically will balance that with an expert in the field, you know, someone who's serving these Fortune 1000 organizations and providing them with counsel and guidance and structure and methodology and sometimes training and inspiration around how to create a truly innovative organization. Delighted to tell you that we're gonna take care of the second piece of that here in just a moment. We have an expert in the arena that I think we're gonna have a lot of fun talking with. And then after that segment of the show, we're gonna switch gears a little bit and introduce you to the executive director of an organization that I have just really become emotionally connected to in recent weeks. I'll let her explain specifically what their mission is and tell you a little bit about the event that they have coming up here on February the 28th called Cherish the Future. But to get us kicked off, I am delighted to introduce to you a lady who is a lifestyle speaker, a change catalyst, and a marketing mentor for the lifestyle industry. Looking forward to learning more about what that really means, but I can tell you from doing a little bit of background research, this lady has got a really solid handle on designing your future. Please join me in welcoming to the show Melissa Gault. Welcome to the show, Melissa.
Thank you, Stone. Delighted to be here.
So tell us, what is this business of what is the lifestyle industry?
Well, I actually coined it recently because I realized that as a designer, we are integrally tied to builders, contractors, stagers, organizers, decorators, and real estate professionals. We are all in the business of delivering that American dream of home ownership. And I don't say house ownership, I say home, because home is what designers make it. And that makes an enormous difference. And I think we've all been hit hard by what's going on. I don't like to point the finger outside myself. I like to instead step up to that plate and take responsibility for it. And I think that too many of the lifestyle industry folks are crying, woe is me, and they're not stepping up. And I think that's really a problem.
And so you go out and, among other things, you actually speak to groups inside mm-hmm. these organizations. I know one of the topics you talk about is Maverick Marketing. Can you say more about that? What is Maverick Marketing? And did Sarah Palin coin that term?
Is that no, <one? laughs> she did not coin that term. I did not grab that from the hockey mom. It's about being collaborative and joint venturing. It's about taking internet marketing and applying it to offline, real world applications, because that is one thing about the lifestyle industry, that it is light years behind the tech curve. It is not in the social networks to any large extent. Real estate professionals aren't typically active in social media, at least many of the ones that I know and talk with at the top end of the game. Many design professionals aren't. 70% of design professionals don't even have a website.
Wow.
The home furnishings industry is dabbling, but they're not really sure what to do with it because, again, it's a very old industry. And they need to be brought into it. So it's basically going to be collaborate or die, because everybody's marketing budgets have been slashed. So the only way you can get the same coverage for less money is by collaborating.
And so do you find that the people you're speaking with, are they resistant at all, at least initially, to this idea of collaborating with each other?
They're not as resistant to the collaboration as they are to the social media. They just, their eyes glaze over when you say something like Twitter and TweetDeck and Twirl, and you go into that foreign language, or Facebook, because they think it's for their kids. That's the only experience they have with it. And they cannot imagine that you can make valuable connections on a medium like that and have those translate into dollars and cents at the bottom line. And you absolutely can.
Are you spending most of your time now coaching other designers and people in the lifestyle industry to get them up to speed, or are you still working with the home owner?
I'm doing less and less on the physical design side with clients. I become extremely selective with design clients that I'm willing to work with, and I do a lot of mentoring. I don't call it coaching, because my experience with coaching is that it's very warm, fuzzy, friendly, play footsie with you, hold your hand. I don't play footsie with anybody. I hold them completely accountable. And it's much more of a consultative approach, whereby I'm providing the strategies, techniques, secrets, and tips and tools, and they're implementing them. I'm not asking them leading questions to get them to find their own answers. I think that's kind of a bit of a waste of time, and I'm sure there's a lot of coaches out there that are going to cringe when I say that out loud. I'm so sorry.
I understand you have a bit of a pedigree when it comes to this business of trying to help people bring on or capitalize on an architect attitude or design mm-hmm. mindset. Tell us about that.
Well, I am fortunate enough to be the great-granddaughter of the American architect and icon Frank Lloyd Wright. That is great-granddaughter. No, I never met him. I'm simply not old enough. We would no doubt have some very spirited discussions, because great-grandfather referred to interior designers as inferior desecrators, and he did not appreciate them. However, what I've done is I've looked at how he was the pioneer in lifestyle design, and how by his design work, he informed the lives that took place inside of his work. And that's really what happens when you blueprint your career, you blueprint your life, you blueprint your future, and then you apply that architect's attitude to it, and you build it and construct it and create those support systems and find those mentors. And it truly does become a building process. And that's what most people aren't able to do. And most people aren't able to implement team building within their own lives. And that's critically important, because none of us can get where we want to go by ourselves. We've got to create a team, whether the team is your family, whether the team is colleagues, whether the team is friends. Sometimes the team includes competitors. You know, friendly competition can be great mm-hmm. teammates.
Now, when you're working with one of your mentees, how do you get them over that hump to deal with their competitors in that way? That seems like a big challenge for a lot of people, where they think, hey, that's, you know, they think of life as a zero-sum game where your win is my loss somehow. How do you get them past that?
Well, first of all, I think the biggest challenge most of them face is they're not clear on who their target market is. So they figure, well, I'm going after all of it. And I'm like, no, that's your whole challenge. What do you really like to do? What's really going to make your heart sing? What's really going to make you, you know, fly out of bed in the morning excited about getting to work? And they go, oh, well, no, I don't want to do it all. I said, no, I didn't think you did. So what parts do you want to do? And then you collaborate with colleagues on those parts you don't want to do. And you make it a win-win. And they start to get it. They get really nervous, though, having to give up the idea of doing it all. And I said, you know what? If you want to be all things to all people, you're nothing to anyone. And it sinks in. And they start to go, you know, you're right. And, I, you know, it's all about targeting and focus. And that's what's happened now is that because everybody's scrambling and they're crunched, they're doing much more of this, I'm just going to take any warm body that shows up as my client. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work that way. The worst mistakes I ever made was when I ignored that gut I had going on inside, churning and crashing and making all that noise of me saying, don't work with this person, don't work with this person, don't work with this person. And I did it, and I lost sleep, and I shed tears, and I was ranting and raving and a lunatic, and I was like, this just isn't working. So, you know, it's, you got to have more criteria than warm body.
I know in your writing and your speaking both that you speak to this idea of creating your own economy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's such a strong message for us to hear and try to latch onto when around us we keep hearing this downward spiral negative message about this elusive creature called, you know, the economy. So how do you help people get turned around and really focused on creating their own economy?
You know, the biggest key to that, Stone, is that we've got to take responsibility for ourselves and our actions. And I find that when you stop pointing the finger outside of you and sit down, take a deep breath and go, okay, what can I do in my business today to make a difference? That's the key. It's also about monitoring very closely, limiting your media information or the resources for it. I'm aware, I'm on top of things, but no, I don't listen to it 6 hours a day. I think that would be an enormous mistake. I make a real point of feeding my brain positive information on a regular basis. I test marketing strategies regularly. I don't just slash the budget and hide in a hole and say, well, when I come back out, when the economy turns around, I'll show back up again. Huge mistake, because here's the cool part. If you're willing to get out there and take some risk in this market, you're going to be the lone man left standing. Because all your competitors have gone and hidden. They've all slashed their budgets. They're all playing hide in the hole. Get out there and market, because this is the best place to be. You've got a lot fewer voices, a lot less noise to compete with. And most people aren't thinking clearly. They're thinking it's time to go hide. Instead, it's time to go revamp your message, get super targeted, and talk to your buyers. Stay in touch with them. It's not about promoing them and hitting them for a sale every chance you get. It's really and truly for building those relationships. And that's what the social media is allowing us to do. It's allowing us to create relationships with people we'd never have had an opportunity to. I had two phenomenal opportunities come through social media network contacts last week. One through Facebook, one through a design opportunity called Ava Living. You know, both were preliminary, but I never would have even known these people but for those opportunities, you know, and it was really significant. So I think that people need to get on that bandwagon. They need to get out there. Stop being scared. Start talking to people. The social media is actually an incredibly positive stream, incredibly positive. And that's one of the cool things about it. You get on there, you start bitching and moaning, and nobody wants to listen to you. They'll unfollow you. They'll say, hey, you're right out of here, you know? But you get out there and you say, you know what? Let's bootstrap it. We can do this. Together, we'll all go farther. That's what it's all about.
Can you talk a little bit about how you're using some of the social media tools that are out there, like Facebook and Twitter?
Yeah, I use it a lot to stay in touch with people. I use it a lot in terms of sharing my blog posts, sharing website innovation, sharing marketing techniques, sharing a lot of positive quotations, and just being upbeat and positive in my market. I will also jump into the feed on a regular basis on Twitter and make little comments to people to connect with them, because it really is about the opportunities to connect that we wouldn't otherwise experience. On Facebook, I've got a group, sixfiguredesigners.com.
Oh,
and
cool.
I bring people into the group, and we've just launched a teleseminar series. I did my first one last week, trying to get them up on the web, telling them what they need to have, what are the five essential steps to a website, how quickly can they do it, we can get you up in 30 days. And I say we, it's not me, it's, you know, somebody I know in the business that I've vetted and tested and think is you know, a great designer at a reasonable cost and very speedy. Because I know designers who futz around with it for a year or more.
Yeah.
And that's not serving them. It's about speed and getting to market and connecting. And I think the coolest thing I found is that on Facebook and Twitter both, if I need somebody, if I need a contact, I just get up there and put it in caps. I'm looking for. And within usually 15 minutes, sometimes 30 minutes to an hour, I'll have several responses saying, go here, check out this person, go to this website. It's
Isn't
awesome.
That great?
It's a living, breathing resource that's so much shorter than having to go do the research myself.
I'll bet.
So that makes a huge difference.
I don't know about you, Lee, but if this lady were mentoring you, can you imagine looking her in the eye and say, well, no, I'm not going to do that, or
no.
I don't want to take action.
It's not an option.
Not at all. Well, let me shift gears with you a little bit, because I can see where there would be tremendous value if I'm an executive, or even if I've got my own little shop. But if I'm an executive with a team and I have my own business anywhere in this lifestyle industry, and I'm beginning to open my eyes to some of these strategies and tactics, and maybe more importantly, the mindset, the thinking pattern that you're advocating here. Okay, I'm sold. You got me. But I've got this company with anywhere from 10 to maybe hundreds of people. How does a leader, even once they've sort of been dyed in the wool, how do they get their people genuinely engaged in innovation and thinking this way? What are some tips for doing that?
I'm delighted you asked, because there's a wonderful case study example I can share with you, a phenomenal success story I did with six Keller Williams offices on a retreat at a mountaintop place in Bama overnight. And we had a two-hour session in the afternoon, and it was a visualization session where they got into teams that they were working in, because while they're independent, real estate agents also work together as teams. And they created these vision boards, both as a team and as individuals, of what they wanted to achieve. And what was really fun was that they suddenly realized that their vision wasn't their vision exclusively. Their colleagues had the same kind of visions they did.
Yeah.
And they got on board with each other, and they started supporting one another. And the results that came even within 2 weeks to a month afterwards, I was getting emails saying, you know, I put on that vision board that I wanted to be on TV. I'm showing up on TV tomorrow, you know, showing a house, doing an open house on television. That's what I really wanted to do. And I'm like, wow, this is powerful stuff, you know. And it really is about getting ultra-focused and bringing those team members, bringing those company people on board and saying, okay, I want to know your visions for the company, your visions for your life, where you want to go, and I'm going to show you mine, and let's see where all those areas meet, because that's where we're going to work the best. People are very rarely as independent in their thinking as they think they are.
I'll bet.
They really are a lot more things in common, a lot more of their goals in common, even if it's at different levels. Okay, so one person's goal is to get the new Hyundai. Another person's goal is to get the new Mercedes. It's still they want a new car. Okay,
right.
That's the bottom line. It's just different levels. And it's like one person's goal may be to go to Disney World on vacation in Florida. Another person's may be to go to the Disney World in Europe. They still want to go to Disney World. It's still about a kid's vacation. So there's a lot more commonality, and people forget that. And they get fragmented. And when they get fragmented is when things start to fall apart.
And so they really do, or can, have a lot to offer
each
other. And in your organization, you can build that collaborative.
You build that rapport, you build that trust, and it is a collaborative infrastructure. They're rewarded for sharing ideas, and it's not considered a competition. You know, and that just makes an enormous difference. It truly does. I have a friend who actually works in the executive ranks of Delta. He came up with the slogan, "Keep Delta My Delta." And it saved the company millions of dollars. They didn't run any kind of a slogan contest or anything. He just, as part of his daily job, he's a wordsmith. He's really good at it. And he said, well, what about this at a board meeting? And they said, we love it. And they tested it, and it flew. That's a very collaborative. They were forced to start working better because of what was happening to them financially. And that's what happens with most companies. I just like to see it not happen to a company financially and see them have a longer vision and bring in this kind of innovative thinking. Makes all the difference in the world.
Well, it sure seems like it. We could talk to you all morning, Melissa, but we are running out of time. As people are interested in maybe having you come speak to their group or having you consult with their organization or mentor them personally, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Probably the easiest is through my website, which is www.melissagalt.com. They can certainly find me, Melissa Galt, on Facebook. You can find me by Melissa Galt or Prosper by Design, which is one of my many Twitter handles. or you can Google me if you want. But, yeah, I would love to make a difference. I think that's really what it's all about. And I get really charged up about seeing the results that my mentees have, seeing the results that my audiences have, the participants in the groups. It's incredible.
Well, it has to be absolutely rewarding work.
It is. It is.
Well, before we let you go, as you may remember, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show. We ask each guest, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made somewhere in their career, and really more importantly, Melissa, what they learned from it. Could we con you into doing that for us?
You know, I have made probably 90% of my career has been mistakes. I focus on the 10% that has been successes. And I think probably the biggest is the one that we all fall into, where in the beginning when you're building your business, I built it with thank yous. I literally wrote a handwritten note for every single call I made, whether I saw you the first time or the 15th time, didn't matter. That built my business. I had people commenting on that. That and I have an absolutely stellar record of being spot on time. I had clients who would look at their clock and say, I can set my clock by your arrival. And in this day and age, that's rare. But that combination of things was really important. After about 3 years, I was just swamped and super busy and having a grand time, and I got sloppy. And I stopped writing those thank you notes. And I've returned to it in spades, and it's not email notes. These are handwritten short. They're not missives. They're just short little, hey, great to talk with you today, whether it's a phone call, whether it's a meeting in person, but that makes a lot of difference. And I think when we go through those original growth periods, we tend to get a little sloppy after we've gotten that push and we've gotten those referrals rolling and we're busy and we're, I don't need any more business. The time to market is when you are busiest, because then you'll never be out of business. And that's what makes all the difference.
Sounds like terrific advice. Please and thank you really do go a long way.
They do.
Well, Melissa, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show. I know you need to run, and I really appreciate you being with us. And hopefully you'll come back and share some more insights sometime.
I look forward to it. Thank you so much for having me on the show, Stone.
Thank you. That's Melissa Galt at melissagalt.com. In just a few moments, we're going to introduce the executive director for the Furniture Bank of Metro Atlanta. But before we do, Stone's got a little self-serving commercial. As many of you listeners know, we shifted the direction of the show back before the first of the year to focus more specifically on innovation. And we did that for a reason. We knew, well, okay, let's be honest, we hoped, and now we know, that putting ourselves in the center of that innovation community with the purpose of tapping expertise in the area of really helping organizations produce return on investment for their innovation efforts, we knew that that would equip us being Stone Payton and our sponsor, the DeSai Group, we knew that that would help us be that much better at serving our own clients. And that certainly has come to pass. And I don't know, Lee, what's it been, one short month of shows, right?
Right, it started the year, right?
Yeah,
we really started focusing on innovation.
Yeah, and we made that shift. I think maybe the first show with that sort of orientation was on January the 5th, the first show of the year. Well, in that very first interview, I don't know if you remember this or not, Lee, but the executive that we interviewed was out of, was it New Bend, Indiana? What do you call it?
No, his name was Newbold.
His name was Newbold, but what's the cold place for Notre Dame and all that is?
South Bend.
Right. South Bend, Indiana. Phil Newbold, CEO of Memorial Hospital and Health System. And the interview was just marvelous. And if you haven't already, I strongly encourage you to go back and listen to that entire interview. But one of the things that we learned from that interview is a concept that Mr. Newbold shared with us that he called InnoVisits. And he went on to explain how even though they're in the hospital arena, they would go and visit the Procter Gambles, the Whirlpools, the GEs of the world, and learn so much about what those organizations were doing to be truly innovative, would bring that back to their hospital system. And I really got enamored with that idea. And as I understand it, Mr. Newbold and his team are coming out with a book on that topic pretty soon.
Right.
And when they do, you know, we'll get a couple cases here at the High Velocity Radio Show, and we'll share them with all of our Decide Group clients and guests here. In the meantime, we're going to go ahead and implement our own version of InnoVisits right here in Atlanta.
Really?
Yeah, what we're going to do, you know, above and beyond what we do here where we have experts come into the studio or call in from all over the country, Stone is going to go out maybe as much as once a week. We'll see, you know, how much activity we get from this. And I'm going to go out and conduct some InnoVisits here in the local market and talk to executives inside innovative organizations. And then my plan is to come back here and report what I've learned on air. And the reason I mention it now, first of all, I think you can look forward to some pretty interesting reports, but we need your help. If you have a relationship with someone inside an organization, for now we're focusing on the Metro Atlanta area, and you feel like this is an organization that is really, truly innovative in some way, let us know. And if you know those people and can somehow facilitate that meeting and help us set up an InnoVisit with these people, you know, we'll take all the help we can get. But even if you do not have that kind of influence inside that organization, but you just know of an outfit that, you know, hey, this would be great if Stone would go interview these people and come back and report on it, let us know. Drop me an email or go onto the radio website and get us a note through the website. But let us know, and I'll reach out to them personally, explain our purpose, and we'll make it happen. We'll go out and we'll see what they're doing.
Can you share a little bit about specifically what kind of innovation you're looking for? Like, does this have to be like inventors? What are you defining as innovation or doing something innovative?
It's a great question, and I suspect, like so often happens in this space, what will surface for most people initially is, oh, well, I know somebody's just got this really great new product that does something, which is fine. But please know this. When I go out there, you know, I'm going to be interested in the product, and I'll ask a few questions. What I'm interested in is the process behind it. How did this organization get to the point where they could produce an innovative product like that? So I'm far more interested in what's really going to make these InnoVisits sing is learning about the infrastructure, the methodology, the thinking pattern, the training, the competencies behind a leader and that person's organization that can produce true innovation, meaning, you know, new product, service that genuinely creates value for the organization or the external market.
Now, and that could be something like in our industry, turnover is 70%, but this company has turnover of 20%. So they're doing something obviously innovative if they can, you know, achieve those kind of results. That would be something innovative for you, right?
Oh, very much so. And I would want, and I think our listeners would be very interested in, well, how did you do that?
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's an important delineation, I think. It's not just, like you said, it's not just a product or service that's some great idea. It could be something mundane that they're just doing extremely well.
Well, yeah, that's an important distinction. And another important distinction is, you know, don't tell me, well, you should go interview Bell South. Well, okay. No, you should talk to Jim Smith in this division of Bell South because they're doing some really way cool stuff over here, you know, in their brand management or something. And they've done so that's the kind of thing that we're looking for. I wanted to give that a little bit of a plug. I'm real excited about doing it. And you can shoot me an email at stone@decide.com, and that's STONE at Decide, is spelled DESAI.com, or give me a ring at 770-518-1412. And, you know, if I'm not taking a nap, I'll answer the phone, and we'll take all the help we can get. All right, enough of the shameless commercials for what Stone wants to do. Let's enough about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think about me? Our next guest is the executive director for the Furniture Bank of Metro Atlanta. And I'm going to spare you the backstory, but I'm just going to tell you right now, I'm going to spare you the detailed backstory. I had an opportunity to sit in on a board meeting for this organization a few weeks ago, and what these people are doing and the way they're going about doing it and the constituencies that they've chosen to serve, all of that just really made a mark on me very quickly. And I walked away from that meeting with a commitment to myself that I would do everything in my power to give these people a venue to go out to the community and let them know about the marvelous work they're doing. The timing is fortuitous because they have an event coming up on February the 28th. So I've invited the executive director for the Furniture Bank of Metro Atlanta to come on, talk a little bit about their mission and purpose, what they're doing. I'm very interested in anything that they have going on that she might consider to be innovative. And then, as I understand it, we also may have one of their corporate sponsors who's helping support this event call in, and I'd be real interested in talking to that person and find out what is it that drew them to this effort, you know, why they chose to support it. So without further ado, we're going to welcome to the show Executive Director for the Furniture Bank of Metro Atlanta, Megan Anderson. Welcome to the show, Megan.
Thanks, Stone. Thanks for having me.
Well, I have a little bit of a frame of reference because you were kind enough to invite me down to a board meeting not too long ago. Tell our listeners, though, if you would, a little bit about the Furniture Bank, what you guys are all about, and what you're trying to do for the people you serve.
Sure. The Furniture Bank gives free furniture to folks that are either moving out of homelessness, people living with HIV and AIDS, and people fleeing domestic violence. So we collect used furniture from the community, primarily individual households, some hotels, some stores, and we give it away to people in those situations. We serve about 3,000 people a year.
Wow.
We operate a warehouse in the Northwest Atlanta area, and folks can come to the warehouse and pick out what they want and set up their new apartment or home.
And so how do you get this furniture? These are individual donations or corporations? How do you get the furniture that you can turn around and give to these 3,000 people?
Right. Most of it's individual households. We have two trucks. We offer a free pickup service in Fulton, Cobb, DeKalb, and Gwinnett counties. We also do get some hotels when they renovate and some furniture stores.
How do you get the word out to individuals to even know this charity exists?
It's one of our biggest problems. Definitely, the internet has helped our website. You can make an online donation, sign up for a furniture pickup online. So that helps. A lot of it's word of mouth. We're finding, though, in this economy, we need to do a better job of getting our name out.
Are you finding that there's more need because in this economy right now? Are you seeing that?
Definitely. We schedule 40 families a week. Typically, clients would have to wait 1 to 2 weeks to get their appointment. By the end of last year, we schedule on a Monday for the whole month, and we would fill up in about 2 hours. So there's plenty of more families that need our furniture that we're not getting to, and we're the only ones in the Atlanta area that are giving away free furniture.
And, oh, really?
And what kind of furniture is this? Is this like dining room tables and chairs, beds?
It's all household furniture. So a family is guaranteed a bed for every person in their family and a sofa, and they're also able to get dressers, dinette sets, you know, bookshelves, coffee tables, end tables, pretty much the basic necessities to set up their apartment. Most of these families have worked really hard. They've been in a homeless shelter. They've struggled to get back on their feet, you know, pay that first month's rent, and, you know, to not have anywhere to have your kids sleep that first night can be really disheartening. So our goal is that, you know, they're not moving into an empty apartment. They're moving into a home, and it's a good, you know, solid, safe, stable place for them to start their new lives.
So not only do you take gently used furniture, I'm sure, from individuals, you also deliver it then to these people that are moving into their homes?
Clients have the option. Most clients choose to come to the Furniture Bank. They do not pay for the furniture, but it's part of their responsibility to come pick up the furniture.
Mm-hmm.
So they come, they can pick out what they want. They're given a list, and then they bring their own truck and transport it.
Wow.
And do you find that collecting some types of furniture is easier than others? You ever run short on one type of furniture, or it just depends?
Definitely. We always run short on mattresses. We can take used mattresses because we give the items away. We don't sell them.
Mm-hmm.
But if we serve 40 families a week, on average, we need about 160 to 200 mattresses a week to keep up with the demand. So that runs out. We also, good wood pieces, dressers, dinette sets can be hard. I know in my home, we definitely change out sofas a lot quicker than we do a good dining room table.
So you have the most of that sofas?
Yes, definitely. And, you know, in a family of with five kids, they need five dressers, and they only want one sofa. Right. As much as I want to give them five, maybe they only want one sofa. So, you know, and they're going into small apartments. It's not that they have a basement for their sofa. So,
how do you get your funding? How do you run this thing?
It's a mix. We get some government funding, some private foundations, some corporations, really trying hard to increase the individual support of the organization, get our name out there more. And that's one of the reasons why we have this fundraiser, Cherish the Future, which you mentioned, because it's a good way to drum up some individual support.
And it's Cherish, spelled like chair, not cherish.
Exactly.
Did you know that, Snow?
Come again?
Cherish.
Cherish. C-H-I-R. Oh, the play on the... Okay. I'm a little bit slow on the update. Well, in just a moment, I want to hear all about this event, because I understand this is like your major fundraiser of the year, and I understand...
But you rely on sponsors, right? That's a big part of...
Correct.
...your funding, and they're here on the line. You want to bring them on to talk about their
Yeah, definitely. We couldn't do the event without them, so that'd be great.
All right, put him on.
Okay.
Or her. Or them. Hello in the camp.
Hello.
Hello, this is Stone Payton on the High Velocity Radio Show. Who are we speaking with?
Richard McCree. I'm the design director at Gensler's Atlanta office.
Well, Richard, thanks for calling in. We were just telling our listeners about this Cherish the Future event, and Lee made a point of saying that you know, one of the things that really makes this thing go is having sponsors. We've got Megan on the show as well, as I think you know. Mm-hmm. Would love to hear from you. What is it that compelled you and your organization to get behind this event?
Well, this is a great fit for us and very timely given the current state of the economy. We have a firm-wide commitment to be responsible citizens in all of our communities, so we encourage all of our staff members to participate in their community. This particular endeavor, you know, really fits our bill because it's about transformational design, which is what we specialize in, and the intriguing aspect of transforming a child's set of furniture into a work of art that's fun and engaging was a great opportunity to flex our design muscle a little bit. We chose to also sponsor the event because the work that the Furniture Bank does here in Atlanta is so critically important, as I mentioned, particularly given our current economic times.
Oh, well, that's great. I'm interested to hear a little bit more about your organization, if you don't mind. Can you take a couple minutes and just tell us about your firm?
Sure. We're the leading architecture and interior design firm in the world. We have 30 offices, over 2,000 employees, and we specialize really in thought-provoking, knowledge-based work in the corporate commercial environments, in retail, in hospitality, and we really challenge all of our staff members to stretch as far as they can with every client to make sure that the work we're doing is transformational and also exhibits the power of design to change people's lives.
Now, on this show, we talk primarily about innovation. Can you share a little bit about how you put these kind of processes in place, you know, company-wide to spur innovation in your firm?
Sure. We have a whole series of events within the company on an ongoing basis, everything from learning sessions to project visits, et cetera. We also, as a company, invest quite a bit of money in research and knowledge-based information about our clients and what it is that they need. We have a new thing that we started a couple of years ago called the Workplace Index, where we have invested large sums of money to investigate with our clients and actually be able to empirically prove that a better designed workplace yields better results and happier employees. And that's never been empirically proven before. So that's a huge and important thing in our industry that that most companies, you know, it's sort of a gray area. It's like, yeah, if you build a nice office, people are happier and they work better, but you can't really prove it. And now we can, which is really great.
That is great. And like you say, very unusual, or at least in my experience, and that's one of the things that so many of the executives that we talk with, the ones that have really risen to the top with their organizations are the ones that have found a way to quantify and really attach some metrics to whatever their innovative efforts are. And there's another thing that you mentioned that, you know, I almost have to laugh because it seems so simple. And I got to tell you, being in this innovation space,
I find still very rare and novel idea. Hey, why don't we ask the customer what they think? And it sounds like you're doing a great job of that.
Yes, and our clients respond very well.
I'll bet they do. Hey, before we let you go, can you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with your organization if they're interested in the innovative work you guys are doing?
Absolutely. You can check out our website, www.Genseler.com, and you can access direct contact information for any of our 30 offices directly on the website and get a look at the work that we do worldwide. We're doing some really exciting work in Shanghai right now. And, of course, most of the major metropolitan areas we have an office and quite a few of the secondary metropolitan areas. So we're where our clients need us to be.
Oh, that's great. And I guess I'll get an opportunity to meet you personally on February 28th maybe, huh?
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Okay. And if any of our listeners show up and actually come to the event, they can get an autographed Richard Genseler something, right? Like the back of your business.
I'm sure we'll have something.
Hey, thanks so much for calling in, Mr. Genseler.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, what a neat guy. I bet you get to hang out with a lot of really interesting, innovative people, don't you?
Definitely. There's lots of great, really innovative and very generous people in the Atlanta community.
Oh,
fantastic.
That is so cool. Well, tell us more about the event. I want to hear more about this thing.
So it's called Cherish the Future, and we have 50 individual artists that take chairs from our warehouse that are either broken or mismatched and turn them into pieces of art that we auction at the event. And then for this time, this year, first time ever, we're having a design contest, which is what Genseler's in. And 16 design firms were giving the same table and chair children's set to transform into a work of art. So all those items will be auctioned off at the event. They're all fantastic and amazing. Lots of artists have put lots of time and energy into doing the pieces. And also this year, our honorary host is Vern Yip from HGTV's Deserving Design, which we're so excited about. So he's doing a piece and coming to the event. So it's going to be a great event.
So have you seen some of the tables and chairs?
Yes. We have four in already, and they are all on the website, which is cherishthefuture.com. You can go there and see all the design, and they're amazing. It's amazing they all got the same thing to start with, and the final pieces are all very, very different, but very, very neat.
And so there'll be an auction where people can buy these chairs?
Correct.
And you auction off other things, too, like in a live auction, you auction off, I don't know, trips and stuff?
Yeah, we have a couple, condo, travel packages, restaurant gift certificates, things like that.
Is it a live auction or a silent auction?
It's both. So about 16 pieces end up in the live, but a lot will also end up in the silent auction. So there's something for everyone. It's great.
And there's still time to buy tickets to attend, buy a table, buy individual seats to come to this thing?
Definitely, definitely. You can buy tickets at cherishthefuture.com. And the gala's on the 28th, and we'd love to have everyone there.
Well, yeah. I'm definitely going to be there.
How much are tickets?
One is $75, two for $145, or you can get a table of 10 for $700.
That's it, a Radio X table.
There you go.
We need a Radio X table, and we should all wear our tuxes.
Yeah, of course.
You don't have one, do you?
No.
I have a tux. Yeah, my nephew got married last year, so I bought a tux. I say Radio X table, and we buy a tux.
Okay, deal.
Well, as it turns out, I really was serious about trying to do what little bit Stone could to give the Furniture Bank a little bit of exposure. And one of the things that we did more recently is, you heard our first guest talk about social media and using Twitter. And so for the Decide Group and for the High Velocity Radio Show, I went out on Twitter and put together this little contest and asked the Twitter community to come back with definitions of innovation. And it was a very rewarding experience. One thing is, on Twitter, for those of you that don't know, whatever you do, you got to do in 140 characters or less, right?
Yeah, to fit it in there. That was pretty impressive, Stone.
But somewhere in all of that, I was able to let folks know that I had begun working with, or at least thinking about, how can we help the furniture bank. And so the Twitter universe got to know that, hey, Stone's into this furniture bank thing. We need to help him as much as we can. So we had a prize, and the guy that won this thing is a guy by the name of Mike Brown, and his Twitter handle is @MikeBrown, and he's got a blog. Mike, please forgive me if I screw this up. I didn't bring my notes to the studio, but I think it's brainzooming.com. But if you'll go to Twitter and look at @MikeBrown for the handle,
you'll definitely get it. At any rate, we turned it over to the Twitter universe. They all voted for their favorite definition. Mike Brown won. And then when I sent him the message over the Twitter waves, you know, do you want to give me your PayPal address? You want me to mail you a check or what? Because it was a $200 prize. It could have been as much as $1,000, but it ended up being a $200 prize. He immediately came back and said, I'd like to donate that to the Furniture Bank.
Wow.
So this morning on air, I wanted to make a point of handing you this envelope, courtesy of Mike Brown. Didn't have anything to do with Stone. And I just think that was a very generous thing to do. And so here's $200 towards your cause from Mike Brown through the Twitter universe.
That's amazing. Thank you. Thank you, Mike. That's a huge help.
Oh, that's terrific. What else we got going on today?
I think we covered a lot of ground today.
Well, I told you everything I know. Well, you know, no, let's ask her. Let's ask. Well, you heard us ask our first guest, so we're going to ask you too. We're going to put you on the spot because you've obviously done a tremendous job of giving the Furniture Bank and their great cause the kind of exposure and visibility that they need so that a community as generous and rich as rich in resources as Atlanta can try to serve them. As successful as you are, surely you've tripped up once or twice in your career. I wonder if you would do that for us. Would you do what we ask all our guests to do on the High Velocity Radio Show? And that is just to share a mistake you've made somewhere in your career and what you've learned from it.
Definitely. I think what happens, and it happens in a lot of small nonprofits, is that I get wrapped up in the daily things of, you know, paying our rent and our gas bill and just the little parts of the organization. And we don't take the time, or we don't think we have the time, to look forward and look at the big picture and see how the Furniture Bank is going to be bigger and better in 5 years and in 10 years. So I think one of the mistakes I make is, you know, you get worried about the little things because that's what you have to do to make sure a small nonprofit doesn't close. but you don't, you know, you need to make sure you're putting the energy in to make sure that we're growing and getting bigger because there's more people that need us that we're serving right now. And so we need to make sure that we're continually growing so that we're here in 5 or 10 years for the Atlanta community.
Excellent point. Excellent. And good learning. And it's easy to do, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
It's easy to let that kind of thing go. Thank you so much for being on the show. We certainly all behind this event, I'm looking forward to attending, and I'm certainly going to, you know, let the six people that listen to what I have to say, I'm going to let them know all about it. Until next week, this is Stone Payton, Melissa Galt, Megan Anderson, Lee Cantor, and the entire Radio X family saying we'll see you in the Fast Lane.